Hi, everyone. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. We are so happy you could join us on this 15th day of November already. We're halfway through the month and almost to the end of the year. It has gone by very quickly. I am very happy to have two very knowledgeable guests with me in the studio today.
Hi, I'm Pam.
Hello, everyone. This is Josh.
And I'm Linda. And we're going to be talking about our science article today and tomorrow. And it is a fairly serious science article. We're going to be talking about a disease for which there is no cure. And have either one of you heard of Huntington's disease before?
I have heard of it. I learned a lot from this lesson. Actually, I wasn't extremely familiar with it, but I've never known anyone who has had Huntington's disease.
How about you, Josh?
So I admit I have also heard of this before, but not in a personal way, and I do not know anyone with Huntington's. I've run into people who have had other types of diseases that are debilitating diseases like Parkinson's, but nothing specific to Huntington's.
I have a friend, actually, whose wife had Huntington's disease, and she was bedridden, I think, 18 years. I mean, it was many, many, many years, and he cared for her, and then eventually she passed away, and it is very debilitating.
Right.
And we're going to be talking about it, but we're also going to be talking about the hope that is coming along with it as we really are going to be following a man who's been diagnosed with it and what he has done in the face of knowing that he has this disease. So I think that... Well, we were just talking about this beforehand, that the vocabulary alone is challenging, so we'll try to talk about or unpack some of the ideas in this article and also some of the vocabulary for you. So don't be afraid if you are looking at it going, this is too challenging. Life is full of challenges. Vocabulary is a very small one. Mm-hmm. So if you have your Advance magazine with you, why don't you open it to page 26, because I think it would be very helpful if you could read along with us so you can actually see the words and the concepts that we're going to be discussing. And if you have your digital device, you maybe want to find it there. And let's begin by reading this. We're going to read the left-hand column and halfway through the right column.
Scientist tackles Huntington's disease. Discover how one man is facing this tragic disease. After Jeff Carroll got tested to see if he'd die prematurely from a hereditary disease that killed his mother and grandmother, a doctor unfolded the results, checked to see if Carroll still wanted them, then read them aloud. Carroll was 25. When he learned he had the rare gene mutation that causes Huntington's disease, HD. Megan Carroll, his wife, was so shaken she couldn't find words. Huntington's disease is relentless in its attack on brain cells. Still incurable, it robs people of memory and personality and strikes them with involuntary, jerky movements that only get worse. Carol's mother died at 54. Born smart and stubborn, according to colleague Dr. Ed Wild, Carroll has responded by immersing himself in the study of Huntington's in the hope of prolonging lives, including his and those of three younger siblings who also have the mutated gene. Now 39, Carroll is a neuroscientist who has attracted $3 million in grants. His work energizes others. The onset of symptoms is expected to hit Carroll in less than a decade. There's lab work to do, kids to raise, and hope to convey. Substantive hope, Carroll calls it, based on rigorous science. I'd be lying if I said there weren't times I'm scared, Carroll said. But I find it less damaging to my life to be directly engaging as opposed to running away.
So we see that we are talking about a man named Jeff Carroll, and he has become a scientist after he found out that he had this disease. And it seems like, you know, he really is very aggressive in his outlook. Not in a bad way. We often think of that word aggressive in kind of a negative way. But here he's aggressive in learning about what's happening and to his body and what he can do in the future. So to me, that's very, you know, he's really showing a lot of hope.
Right. I agree. In fact, I like the verb that the writer used in the title. Scientist tackles Huntington's disease. Tackle is to deal with an opponent. That's one definition. And it makes me think of the football term, tackle.
Mm-hmm. Right. So here it's to go after it, to see what you can find out about it and how you can handle it.
Right. It's also kind of a little bit aggressive term, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily physically aggressive in this case, because it just means really going after it.
Well, I think we should take a first, let's take a look at the root problem here that it talks about. If you have your magazine, it's right up there, right alongside the picture, because I think this would help us understand more about the article itself. So it says that at its root, Carol learned, was a genetic defect on chromosome 4, where a sequence of nucleotides, or DNA building blocks, repeats more than it should in a sort of molecular stutter. Children have a 50-50 chance of inheriting that gene mutation from a parent with it. So okay, I read it, Josh, so what does this short paragraph say to you?
Well, it says to me that the chromosomes are kind of all the genetic material that's inherited in every cell. So it's the information that the cell needs in order to replicate itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is a problem with one of the chromosomes, and that is the way that the DNA, or the instructions for building itself, repeats itself, has what they call the stutter. So the repetition is off. And maybe it's a little bit extra, maybe it's not quite synced up the way that it should be, but then it eventually leads to the full-blown Huntington's disease. But it says here that children have a 50-50 chance of inheriting this genetic problem from their parents, which makes me think that since everyone usually has a pair of chromosomes, usually meaning always, that they will get one chromosome from their mother, one chromosome from their father. So they will have a 50-50 chance of getting a chromosome that has this mutation.
Right.
And this is great information. It's a very technical explanation for what Huntington's actually is. I found an easy definition.
Okay.
That was kind of easier for me to understand. Huntington's is a hereditary brain disorder. In other words, you do get it from one of the parents, as Josh has just said. Unfortunately, as Linda said earlier, it is incurable at this point. It's also progressive and degenerative.
Mm-hmm.
You gradually get worse and worse.
So we see from our article that actually Jeff was tested when he was 25, okay, to see if he would die prematurely from a hereditary disease. So this is one of our vocabulary words, and it just means something that is passed down from one of your parents. And Josh talked about that. Mm-hmm. So you get a chromosome from your mother and one from your father, and those traits mix together. So it comes from parent to child. And notice that it, both his mother and his grandmother had it, okay, and both of them passed away from this disease. And so this next phrase says a doctor unfolded the results. So that just means he had it on a piece of paper, okay? I was reading that going, what? What
sure.
Are we talking about? But it just means it was on a piece of paper that he opened up and looked at, and then he wanted to see if Carol really wanted to know the results. And then he told him that he, in fact, did have it. So my friend, whose wife had it, they have two children, and his daughter has two children, and none of them want to be tested because they don't want to know. But we see here that when Carol was 25, it looks like he finally decided he wanted to be tested. And if his mom passed away at 54, perhaps that was maybe the event that kind of, you know, triggered his desire to know what was going to happen. So he learned that he had a rare gene mutation. Okay, so now we're back to these words that were this vocabulary again, okay? So if a gene mutates, what happens?
So it means the gene changes and in a permanent way, which then produce permanent differences in the way that they reproduce the following cells.
Okay. And he learned that he had this one that caused Huntington's disease. And I am sure this next sentence I felt I could identify with if that had happened to me, anything like this would happen. She was so shaken, which means she was so shocked that she couldn't even talk.
Right. She, meaning his wife, he was already married mm-hmm. at this time, so I'm sure they were both in the doctor's office together waiting to hear the results. And she clearly was not expecting to hear what the doctor told them.
Right. So we go on to see some of the symptoms of this disease. It says that it's relentless. If something is relentless, it just means it doesn't stop, okay? There's nothing you can do to block its way or to keep it from happening. It mm-hmm. just keeps going. And it's relentless in its attack on brain cells. So we see that it's, as your easier definition said, it attacks the brain. And actually, I think that there's an illustration at the top of page 27. If you have your magazine, you can look. It's very clear, you know, if you take a look at the normal brain versus a brain with Huntington's disease, you can see that it's the attack on it. You know, it's starting to disappear at the very bottom, the base of the brain.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And also the ventricles are starting to spread out, so it's affecting a great deal of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and again, it's still incurable, so there is no cure for it. This is a good word to know. And what does it rob people of, Josh?
Well, this is a part of the reason why this is such a tragic disease, right? So it robs people of memory and personality, then also strikes them with involuntary jerky movements. So when you, in this case, when they're talking about being stricken with something, it means that your body is sort of subjected to these movements that you can't control that are very jerky, so they're rapid and not very well coordinated.
Okay. And it only gets worse with time. So I think eventually, well, we're going to go, we'll talk more about this later as it progresses. So Jeff Carroll was born smart and he was born stubborn. And if Doris were here, she would say that, yeah, he must be German. And this is according to his colleague, Dr. Ed Wild. And Carroll has started studying. He responded by immersing himself in the study of Huntington's in the hope of prolonging lives, including, and this is what I think is really tragic, those of his three younger siblings, so his three younger brothers and sisters who also have the very same mutated gene. So four of them in this, the four children in this family all have Huntington's disease. And
that's just heartbreaking you consider that they had a 50-50 chance, mm-hmm. but all 100% of them actually have it. I like the verb that they use, immerse. I like that verb because it makes me think of language study. It's a verb, a word that we used a lot when we began studying Chinese, to immerse ourselves into the culture. That means if you immerse yourself in water, you're completely underneath, you're completely within the water. And so he began to immerse himself in this study. He became proactive, as Josh said earlier, in trying to learn as much as he could about how to deal with this disease.
And now he's 39. Okay, so this happened 14 years ago when he found out. And he is a neuroscientist who has received quite a bit of money in grants. Although $3 million, I was thinking, you know, this is not a real widespread disease like cancer.
Sure.
So the amount of money that he's gotten, you know, is small compared to what research of some diseases receives. But still, $3 million is quite a bit. So he's a neuroscientist, which is what?
This is a specialist, someone who specializes in the study of the nervous system.
Okay. And he got $3 million in grants. And grants are money that is given usually by the government and sometimes by organizations to fund a specific project. And this project, of course, would be the study of Huntington's disease.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it says here that his work energizes others.
Right. I think his work is providing hope. Mm-hmm. I think it's providing energy, and it's just providing a brighter outlook for those who want to learn more, need to learn more about the disease.
And what's going to be happening to him in the near future?
So the onset of symptoms for Huntington's is expected to hit Carol in less than a decade. So we were talking earlier before about it's relentless in its attack on its brain cells, and that it robs people of memory, personality, as well as it gives them these jerky, involuntary movements. These are all symptoms of the disease. And when we talk about the onset of symptoms, we are talking about the moment at which these unpleasant symptoms really begin to be noticeable.
So basically, he's lived 14 years with no symptoms, and now they know that within the next 10 years they're going to start happening. So, you know, you can live with this disease. Well, he has lived with this disease for 39 years with no symptoms, okay?
Right.
And now, by the time he's 50, they are definitely going to strike.
Right.
Okay? It says here, there's lab work to do, kids to raise, and hope to convey.
If you convey something, you are giving, you're providing something, you're passing it along. And this is one of his goals. He wants to provide hope. Mm-hmm. He knows that mm-hmm. there's no cure at this point, but he not only does he want to continue the research, he wants others to continue after he's gone.
Right. I like his attitude. I think that, you know, if we're facing challenges in our life, I personally feel that we can really learn something from him. He says he'd be lying if he said there weren't times where he's scared. I think we're all scared. But what we do with that fear makes a big difference in how we live our lives. So he's chosen to do what, Josh?
That he feels that it's less damaging to his life to just be directly engaged. And as opposed to running away, and really sort of tackle this problem, like we would say, head on. So instead of running away, just going straight into it and doing whatever you can in order to make the best of it.
Right, to see if he can understand it, to provide some hope for the future, maybe a cure. He never uses that word, which we're going to read about shortly, but to see what he can do, maybe to stave off the onset of the symptoms,
right.
Maybe to live a more vital life. So all of these things are mixed in with it. Well, let's take a look at the next little section here, the frightening symptoms. And so we're in the right-hand column in the middle of the page, and let's read to the end of that page.
Frightening symptoms. In 1999, Carol's father told him his mother was showing signs of Huntington's. He started searching. He learned about the stigma attached to patients, whose jerks and twitches evoked stares, slander, and misdiagnoses, including public drunkenness. After the early stages, marked by depression, irritability, and loss of coordination, people with Huntington's are eventually trapped in their bodies, able to perceive their deterioration, but unable to communicate. Death often comes 10 to 20 years after diagnosis, from a complication such as choking or an infection.
So it looks like he found out about his mother's disease when he was about 17 to 19, in his late teens, I think.
Okay.
We go back to 1999, it's like 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
so or 18 years ago, and he's 39, maybe his early 20s. So he started searching to find out what he could find out about this disease. And what are some of the things that he found out?
Very frightening, just as our subtitle says, they're very, very frightening symptoms. He learned that there's a stigma associated with the disease, because for years there was a lot of misunderstanding about the disease, and before maybe an individual would be diagnosed, some of these things would begin, their body would begin to jerk or twitch involuntarily beyond their control. This would cause people to stare. It would cause them to misdiagnose, even to declare that the person was drunk.
Mm-hmm. But you know that I think that that's probably a fairly common reaction when you see something happening or somebody you feel is behaving in that manner that you don't know. And we always associate movement with, you know, something that we know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's very common.
Sure.
So obviously what you're seeing is somebody that probably is looking like maybe somebody who's drunk would act.
Right.
So I'm sure that his mother was very judged by people.
Mm-hmm.
So after the early stages, so these are the early stages, and actually he hasn't shown any yet, but this at the beginning, what happens?
So this is talking about these symptoms, and after you first start experiencing these symptoms, that you then also experience depression, irritability, and then a loss of coordination. So this is not surprising, really, that if all these things start happening to you, if you feel like people are kind of judging you because your body has started to go out of your control, then it's no surprise that you become depressed and also irritable. Although I know that there's a possibility that may also be connected, as far as the irritability and depression goes, with the deterioration of the brain. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you might have two things going on. So a biological effect as well as, you know, just a coping effect, right?
And also loss of coordination.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's what we've basically been describing here.
That's exactly right. And we see at the end of that long sentence that this is so frightening, but people with the disease are eventually trapped in their own bodies. They're not able to communicate. I think if you are someone who knows that you have the disease, just knowing the symptoms alone
mm-hmm.
would be so terrifying. But then we go on to see that they're trapped in their bodies, they can't communicate, but they are aware. They're able to perceive their deterioration.
So they must lose their ability to speak as well. I know most people with Huntington's end up bedridden.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, because especially if you are losing your ability, your coordination, the loss of coordination, so your walking becomes, I think you eventually lose the ability to be able to walk.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, to me, that's not the bad part of it. The bad part of it is being trapped inside your body and you can't express anything.
Right. Or communicate even sort of like, you know, basic needs like, you know, being thirsty or hungry or really anything, really.
Right. Mm-hmm. It seems like you're at your caretaker's mercy, really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say it that way, but kind of that's what we're thinking, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So it takes 10, you can live this way for 10 to 20 years, which is a long time to be in this kind of state. And after diagnosis, so death comes 10 to 20 years after diagnosis, and he was diagnosed 15 years ago.
Right.
Right.
But he hasn't shown any symptoms yet,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting.
And I think for a long time, before this was really well understood what was happening to people on a genetic level, that they would then be diagnosed after they really start showing a lot of the symptoms, right? And then once the symptoms started being evident, at that point they would have about, you know, 10 to 20 years before passing away or dying from it, but not from the disease itself, but a complication that's caused
right.
by the disease, right? So an infection or choking or something like that.
I know my friend's wife, they knew she had the symptoms, and she suffered from those for 18 years. So
wow.
that's a long time.
That's a long time.
And mm-hmm. did you say that she was bedridden or had...
Yes, she was bedridden.
Had to stay in the bed, couldn't be
right.
out of the bed.
And eventually it required such full-time care that she lived in a home. They had to move her to a home, you know, a nursing home.
Sure. What age was she when she
I don't know.
Passed
he,
away?
I think she was in her early 50s.
Mm.
It seems about the same age as Jeff Carroll's mother, who was 54 when she passed away. But I don't think it has anything to do with that age, you know.
Right.
But we see a lot of hope coming from Jeff Carroll, actually. You know, he has not given us the feeling at all that he's defeated, but he is pursuing a lifestyle with his family and also aggressively trying to maybe not find a cure, but to find a way for people to be able to live with the disease and maybe stall off the onset of the symptoms.
I agree. If we look at the second column, lines 2 and 3, of course this is his life's purpose at this point, but he also has a family. He says that he has kids to raise and he has hope to pass on to others. So I really think he's someone to be greatly admired.
I do too. And you know, sometimes it doesn't take much. You all of a sudden something clicks and you find it. You find what you can do to maybe stave off the disease or cure it.
That's right.
So, you know, I really greatly admire this man. And we are going to be talking more, actually, in a little bit more detail. So come back tomorrow for some more terminology, medical terminology or science terminology, but also to learn more about what Jeff Carroll is doing. And we hope you have a great rest of the day, and we hope to see you here again tomorrow on Advanced Studio Classroom. Goodbye.
Goodbye.